This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Trojan fans. It's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans! Welcome to another edition of the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, joined alongside by Mr. Triple Double himself, Connor Morissette. We got to talk about what's going on. The world of USC football recruiting, rebuilding the roster as we come out of spring football and head into the offseason graduation ceremonies and everything going on around USC right now. And then they'll start up summer workouts here pretty soon. The player run practices and the coaching staff is trying to put some final touches on this roster heading into Big Ten play in the 2024 season. So Connor and I will talk about that. Hits and misses in the transfer portal and where the USC Trojans stand as far as scholarship math goes. We are simulcasting live on our YouTube channel over at Inside Troy. So if you're watching us live or on replay, thanks very much for that. And if you are live, you can go into the chat and put some questions or comments. I'll do my best to monitor that and put it up on the screen. And if you have more traditional questions, you want to email us, you can send it to podcast@uscfootball.com. Let us know. It's for the Ryan and Connor show. You can send questions to any of our shows over there. But if you want it for this show specifically, send us that email address and let us know who it's for. You could also call or text us, leave a voicemail, or shoot us a text, 424-254-9141. And if you have the Apple podcasting app or on Spotify, you can leave us 5-star ratings there. And if you have Apple, you can also leave us a review, which we appreciate very much. And I do appreciate Connor joining us. He's remotely joining us today because I kind of put the show together at the last minute. Didn't want him to drive all the way to the studio. But welcome in, Connor. How you doing, man?
Doing well. Pleasure to be here. Glad we can do it with me at the house here. So let's talk some football, and we can also talk about the beach volleyball team winning its fourth championship in a row. Just unheard of. So football, I know some people are a little bit up and down with the state of recruiting right now. We can get into all that, but I did want to shout out the beach volleyball team. What a run they're on right now. And I mean, the way they're going, I wouldn't be surprised if it continued.
Yeah. And let me get a pull up a picture for that, because I had one up there. Yeah. So women's beach volleyball, if you're watching live on YouTube, put up the four-peat title. Amazing. Fourth national championship in a row. Dane Blanton doing an amazing job there. 5 years of coaching, one COVID, four titles. So not bad from Coach Blanton, the former Olympian himself. We've had him on the show a number of times, and we're going to have him on again next week with a couple of the players. They're going to come into studio. So we were trying to get that to happen this week. It didn't happen. That's why we kind of put this one together a little bit later. We have another special guest coming in, another former USC football player He'll be in next week too. So we've got some big guests coming up on the show. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But we will, you know, I'm a beach volleyball guy. We will talk some women's beach volleyball. Really historic four-peat there. You know, beating UCLA again in the championship. So USC fans gotta be happy about that. I see some people are active in the chat. Thank you for doing that. Felix said volleyball. Okay. Thank you. Bye. We're going to talk other things. Oop, that was the wrong comment I'll put up there, but I'll put up on the screen. Yeah, they won the national championship. You know, it's pretty impressive. I was actually looking as USC heads into the Big Ten, total NCAA national championships. You know, UCLA has the second most, you know, behind Stanford. USC's third most, I think 113. But if you add USC and UCLA up, it's almost like the rest of the Big Ten combined. You know, there's some programs that have a bunch of championships, but USC and UCLA bring a lot of championship pedigree to the Big Ten. We'll kind of talk about that stuff later. I do want to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. They've been great to us over the years. Love working with Trader Joe's. Made my little weekly stop in there the other day. Meats, cheeses. I did a nice little cheese plate. I love doing that. They have different prepackaged meats like salamis and, you know, I love putting those together. The fig spread, you got to try if you like charcuterie board stuff. I know we talked about charcuterie board pizza last week, but the fig spread is great. And then I get the soft brie. I like that too. And they have a whole assortment of crackers. So I love doing, especially summertime, just little like cheese boards and things. So go check that out over at Trader Joe's. And speaking of the beach stuff we were talking about before, I am doing a fundraiser. I just want to let people know Connor already donated, so I appreciate that. I'll just do this real quick. It's called the Tour de Pier. Three different cancer charities, you know, main one being pancreatic cancer, which is a killer. I've been riding in this event for several years now. I am one of the satellite instructors. So there's about 400 bikes on the beach doing a ride at the Manhattan Beach Pier. So I'm one of like 12 instructors up there, you know, helping the people out there doing, it's basically like a spin class on the beach. They do 5 hours of it. I'll be doing 1 hour. But I will put a link in the chat if you want to donate. There's a picture of me up on stage, I think last year, doing it with my partner there. But it's a lot of fun and raising money for charity. So we'd appreciate that if you would consider donating to the ride. And it's a tax-deductible donation. But Connor, get into some of this football stuff. The transfer portal window has closed, meaning no more players can enter the portal. But there's a whole bunch of guys already in there, so it's not like you can't get players out of it. But there were some big-time defensive tackles that USC was after and didn't get them. So I think they're still in search mode looking for you know, some big linemen in the middle to help slow down the Big Ten run games in there. But kind of what were your thoughts on some of the misses there and maybe where USC kind of goes from here, trying to get some beef on the defensive line?
Well, I think just mathematics-wise, you look at it right now, and USC's lost two interior defensive linemen in the spring cycle when the hope was they wouldn't have lost those two guys in Isaiah Rakes and Dejon Lafitte, and they were going to add to that haul. So right now they're two sort of in the hole, and they were really, really in on Derek Harmon, the guy who transferred from Michigan State, who wound up at Oregon. That was a tough miss for them. So they have some other guys who they're targeting now, and I think the one that looks the most likely is Grand Valley State, a D2 school defensive tackle, JVR Suggs. He was visiting last weekend. But the whole sort of talk about USC was we need more bodies, and they've lost two bodies in the middle there. So I know a lot of people on the message boards are panicking, and I kind of agree with the panic. It's tough. You got Barry Alexander in the middle and then a big gaping hole beside him. That was supposed to be Isaiah Rakes. And he, of course, after only about 3 months at USC, ends up transferring out back to, or he goes to Auburn. He started at Texas A&M. And Dejon Lafitte wasn't really supposed to play a big role this season, but you just need depth, and he's gone. So, like I said, two in the hole, and USC will add at least one defensive lineman. They need to. I think they'll probably add multiple. They have about five scholarships, I believe, Ryan. You'll release your scholarship distribution chart at some point this week. So they definitely have some room. Now they just got to fill it. And people are complaining about NIL and, you know, the stat, it's very cyclical. There's a big recruiting win and everything's great, and then you miss a guy and everything's terrible. So I don't think in some ways it's – Lincoln Riley says this a lot, and I think he's right. It's not as good as it looks a lot of the time, and it's not as bad as it looks a lot of the time. Right now they're sort of in that valley, and you want to be up in the peaks. That's what my high school soccer coach used to say. They're peaks and valleys, and I think recruiting-wise they're in a valley right now. It's tough to miss out on some of these top defensive lineman targets, but they'll definitely bring in someone because they have to. And we'll see what the future holds, because I do think ideally Isaiah Rakes is still here. They hit on Derek Harmon too, and then there's some actual competitive depth. And no matter who they bring in, it's not really going to be a proven player at the Power 5 level on the inside. So that's the big concern. And you got to hope Eric Henderson in his first year can coach these guys up. Because right now it looks like a little bit of a weakness heading into a new conference that loves to run the ball.
No, I agree with you there. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as saying panic. And, you know, there's a lot of reaction and maybe in some cases overreaction to individual players not signing here or there or wherever. I feel like this is a situation that there have been some peaks and there have been some valleys. And, you know, just last week we were at the House of Victory event. There was so much more buy-in from former players. We heard, you know, time and time again, and we put some of this information in the war room if you want to go check it out, about how more there's more big-time boosters getting on board, you know, the education process of having supporters of the program understand that this isn't just a luxury item, that having NIL and a war chest of money to be able to pay players from the high school ranks and the transfer portal, it's not a luxury, it's a necessity. This is how the game is played now. And the game's changing. The rules of the game are changing. They've changed in the last couple of months with that Tennessee-Virginia lawsuit, changed the way USC approach recruiting, where now they're more involved, having their NIL representatives more involved in the actual recruiting process for high school players, which they weren't doing before. I think the USC was playing catch up. Just, you know, in the last year, we've seen them grow by leaps and bounds in the NIL space. And I think now they're at the level, from the people we talk to, that they can pay like some other of the top programs. You know, they're up there in the, you know, with the top 10, top 15 programs. I think they're in that sort of range. The problem is there's a few programs that are like out of range. Like they're beyond, like an Oregon. I think Texas A&M was in that at least for a while. You know, Tennessee might have been there, where there is just more money available to, and you could say overspend on players. And I think with Phil Knight and Division Street, you know, Oregon's collective might be the best in the country with Nike executives and everything on that board. Phil Knight's, you know, in his 80s, he wants to win a championship at Oregon. And we're seeing them spend more than the going rate for players. And, you know, the market changes and all that. But there's a few programs that are in the NIL, like, stratosphere. And unfortunately for USC, one of their rivals, Oregon, happens to be one of them. And so, from the people I've talked to, I don't know if you've heard this too, Connor, if you're talking about paying seven figures to a defensive lineman for 1 year, USC's collective isn't in that game. And I think we heard from Brian Kelly at LSU that they're not willing to go there for things like that. There's a few programs are that will, and they're going to be the ones that spend, you know, more than whatever the going rate would be for a player. USC isn't there. I don't think the problem is, I don't think that means USC's NIL is terrible. There's just like a handful, a couple of programs that are just willing to spend as much money as possible on whoever they need at the time. And USC's now got to the point where they can play with the big boys, but not those, you know, not this elite, you know, they're in the lottery of the NBA draft, but they're not like the top three picks or something. I think if you want to put it that way as an analogy, that's just sort of my assessment. I know fans are kind of upset and they're pissed off about it, but I feel like USC's NIL efforts have grown a ton and they can now play the game where before they weren't even playing the game, but that doesn't mean you're like at an Oregon level. And I think that's sort of where USC is now. I don't know what you think about that or if you agree or not.
I think that's all totally fair. And I think it's a tough place to be when you're desperate. And USC was desperate to add an interior defensive lineman. They still are. They're a little bit less desperate, but I'd still describe it as desperate to add an edge rusher. And when you're just trying to transactionally recruit a player, and it's not all about the money. That certainly is a big part of it. But when you're desperate for someone and it's just one individual player and they have maybe 10 or 12 high-level schools to choose from because they're in high demand as well, it can turn into a highest bidder situation. And I think USC is smart not to pay seven figures for one player just to come to the school for a year who is not guaranteed to be a home run first-round pick. Now, a year ago, if Leatu Latu was in the transfer portal for whatever reason and the staff felt like he was a guy who could come in and have a massive impact, he's probably worth that money. But I think it's too unclear to – or just the future, you just don't know to spend that kind of money at a position of need. So while USC is desperate, and maybe if they absolutely needed to get a player, they could pony up the money for it. I thought it was smart not to get crazy with it with some of the numbers we heard floating around. But it just speaks to if USC had recruited a little bit better – defensively on the inside from the high school ranks the past couple of classes, or if previous transfer portal classes they looked at this. It's so unpredictable, so I don't want to give them too much grief. They did address the interior of the line by bringing in Isaiah Rakes, and then he leaves. No one can predict that someone's going to leave after 3 months. But being desperate in this NIL era is not a good place to be, because if you're so desperate and you're not a Texas, an Ohio State, or an Oregon, there's a good chance that the player you're really desperate for is really good. And they're going to, if they are really concerned about the money part of it, they'll probably end up somewhere else because those other schools just have more money to play with. So I think you're spot on, like I said, and the NIL stuff, it's getting a lot better. And we see that with USC landing some five-star high school guys, and Eric Henderson has made a big impression. But in the transfer portal, it can kind of turn into a highest bidder situation. And I still don't think USC is in a position to win that. And I don't think that's necessarily a huge problem if you recruit better. They just haven't recruited better on the interior of the line the past few cycles. So it's a perfect storm to miss out on a big-time prospect, and that's sort of where we are right now.
Yeah, and I think that desperation is a good way to put it, just because – and it's because of the failings from the past couple of years that's happened. And, you know, a guy like Derek Harmon, you know, going to Oregon – and if Gerard and Chris Trevino talked about this on the Two Star Recruits podcast, and there were some people kind of questioning if USC cared or what the effort was. And I would disagree with that. And I think Gerard did as well about the effort there. I mean, he was talking to sources where before Oregon kind of came in with like ridiculous money offer, that USC was really in it, even against like an Ohio State. And I think Ohio State has one of those amazing off seasons. They've had a crazy off season. I don't think they're paying as much as Oregon was willing to pay. There might only be, you know, one or two programs that are doing what Oregon's really doing here, but USC was really in it. And the people I've talked to, it's just like, you know, they have a certain amount of money. They can't spend $1 million on a player to bring them in for 1 year. So they're trying to spend smartly, but the desperation part is still there because of some of the failings before. So I think it looks good. I think if you just see what Eric Henderson's doing, you know, 2 years from now, you're going to be like, wow, he's been killing it. But right now there is a level of desperation trying to, that first year in the Big Ten, you want to, you know, have enough beef on the defensive line. They, you know, they got some young guys in there, you know, a bunch of freshmen, but I don't know if you're going to expect them to do that much. And, you know, if you don't bring in anybody, you're going to have to. But I know USC fans would have loved to see some big time defensive tackle, nose guard kind of guy coming in. It just, you know, I don't think the money worked out in the right way, but because you were desperate and there was a lack of inventory out there, which drives up the price as well. And there's a lot of fans that don't even want to hear that kind of talk. And it's weird to even say it, Connor, you know, just, but that's, there's a supply and demand. There's not a lot of big defensive tackles. And when Bear Alexander, you know, defensive lineman comes off the board, he comes back to USC. Jay Toia goes back to UCLA. The few guys that were out there, the price just went up. And that's just sort of the reality of it. I think the one thing, you know, for the future, you like the way Eric Henderson is relating to players and recruiting and all that. If they had those guys in place in the December window, it might have been even a different story. So you're kind of coming from behind the eight ball a little bit, you know, working through all this. But the rules are changing. The game is it's just changing by the week. We might have, by next cycle, NIL in-house, where schools are paying players directly and there's contracts and things like that. So it's changing a lot. So I don't know. I'm not someone that's saying, like, this is, you know, the worst thing in the world. I think you have to do what's best for your program, and you need a defensive tackle really badly, but I don't think the money was going to be there to overspend the way like an Oregon would. But you could say that for just about anybody. There's not a lot of, you know, not very many programs that could do what Oregon was doing. There's just a handful of them, and Oregon happens to be one of them.
And it is frustrating for USC fans. I wrote during the December signing period, Oregon has won a lot of these recruiting battles, and it hasn't been money every time, but that is, of course, the common denominator now. So that kind of is like a kick in the pants a little bit, because Oregon and USC both want a guy. A lot of the time it's been Oregon that they choose. And I do think one other thing, Ryan, I've seen some people say, oh, well, USC hasn't landed a defensive lineman because they're happy with the options that they have. And just the math of that doesn't make any sense. No. They're down two linemen who they would really like to replace. And just talking to people on the staff behind the scenes, like, they were really in on Harmon. And someone texted me, we need him. Like, it's not that the people in-house are doing this amazing job. And I'm sure these guys are getting better and they've beefed up, but there is a big need. The staff knows there's a big need. They're communicating that they have this need. And for some people just to say, oh, I think the in-house options are enough, that is false.
Yeah, no, I agree with you too. They're definitely trying. And there's a market for this. I think what, if you take away from that USC is embracing that the importance of NIL, I think the previous administration, with Mike Bone, was more reluctant to kind of say, hey, this is a really important piece of the thing. Jen Cohen gets it. She's saying it's really important. They're getting more people on board. They're raising more money. That's all you can ask. They are not saying, we don't want to play this game. They're trying to play the game. There's a couple programs that are playing the game that I don't think anybody can play right now, unless you get this billionaire that just wants to throw all kinds of money at any player you need. Oregon happens to be one of those programs, like I said. So, I mean, all legal. This isn't like I'm saying that they're doing anything wrong. You can pay players as much as you want. You know, this is a part of the thing. I think USC just was slower to, with the previous administration, they were just slower to adapt this new world order, I guess you could say, in college football. But they are getting a lot better, and they are playing the game. And if you saw that event with Ronnie Lott speaking and all these former Trojan legends there, like, they're getting it, and they're getting much better in that game. But it's like comparing, you know, like, you've made the NBA, but you're not LeBron James yet. You know, like, that's kind of the way I would look at it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think the big barometer coming up is, can you hold on to the commitment of Julian Lewis, the five-star quarterback in 2025? If he, after some of these visits he's about to take, shuts things down, sticks with USC, I think behind the scenes, that's a massive win for USC's NIL setup. And while I do believe things are trending in a better direction, if you can hang on to him now that USC is allowed to negotiate with high school recruits, that would say to me, okay, we've landed this massive, massive prospect. He shut everything down. Our NIL is buttoned up, and it's good to go. Now we can fill out the rest of this class. I think Lewis in that 2025 class, if it's a top five, top 10 class, like USC hasn't been able to sign these past couple cycles, then that to me will, what we're saying, kind of spell it out that the NIL situation at USC is a lot better than it has been.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. We had Blackie Chan, and if you guys are putting questions in, I'll star them and get to them later. But the next topic was about the special teams players at USC has signed. That's been, I know they're, every time, you know, a punter or something commits to USC, they're like, can he play defensive tackle and all that kind of stuff. But he wants to know, what are your thoughts on the recent uptick in special teams players that USC has received commitments from? What's the reason for them? I'll give a thought real quick that USC special teams were below average at best last year. They were not very good. There was a lot of criticism of maybe you need a special teams coordinator, and you know Lincoln Riley didn't go that way. But bringing in some depth as far as kickers, punters, snappers go on special teams, I think the difference being people were kind of comparing it to when John Baxter was there. Like sometimes he had five or six guys on special teams scholarship. So you're like putting up, and they were bad too. So he put a lot of resources into special teams as far as scholarship numbers, which are, you know, precious, and you still were terrible. That's a problem. So I think, you know, getting some walk-ons there, you know, maybe your starters on scholarship and your walk-on is, you know, potentially going to get a scholarship when they move up and take over the job and get groomed there and to try to be that. So a lot more depth on special teams, but any thoughts on the players that USC signed, Connor?
I just think it's for competition. I think last year you could argue the kickoffs on special teams were way below average. The kicking was probably average with Dennis Lynch and maybe a little bit below average. He was just crazy. He made every kick, I believe, from over 40 yards, but he missed four or five under 40. So you would just like to be more consistent in the kicking game. And then punting, Eddie Chaplicki had some nice moments, but he wasn't a 10 out of 10 amazing NFL draft kind of future NFL draft product kicker or punter. So I think the reason USC's making these moves, they brought in Hawaii punter Cameron Sharangi, Long Beach City College junior college punter Ray Sanchez, a long snapper who they had a long snapper transfer out. So it's not a huge surprise that they've added Devin McDonough from El Camino College. And then the kicker from Georgia Southern, Michael Lance. It's all about competition. Lance will compete with Dennis Lynch and Tyler Robles. The two punters who were added will compete with Chaplicki. I think it's the USC coaching staff challenging some of the guys on the roster and just bringing in more competition, which in my opinion, how is that not a good thing? It's awesome. The more players you have, the more competition there is, should lend itself to better results. And that's sort of how I look at it right now. They want to upgrade those spots and they're bringing in some guys to compete.
Yeah. And then there were questions like if they're walk-ons. Yeah. Most of these guys, I think, preferred walk-ons. We'll know kind of for sure going forward, but like on my chart right now, and we'll release this in a little bit. I've been doing these every year kind of since the sanctions, just because there was a need, because we weren't sure how many guys USC had on scholarship. You know, when they only had 75 available, and then there was the blue shirting and all that, you know, there were so many different ways to try to get around this, but that's kind of why we started the scholarship distribution chart. I kind of wanted to maybe get away from it. And then people were like, no, we want it. So I'm putting it back together again. I get it. And I use it as a resource too. Even sometimes when I'll do like a radio show, if, you know, just glancing at the chart and knowing like classes and stuff at a glance, I like it very much. But Eddie Zaplinski, how do we say his name again? Zaplinski?
Chaplicki.
Chaplicki. We had it like, it was like three different ways or whatever. But yeah, he comes over. He's a senior right now on scholarship. We also have Hank Pepper and Michael Lance. So in my count, I have three specialists that are on scholarship. But, you know, you got, I think they're going to have like eight or nine guys or something that are in there that are kind of, you know, working with the depth and all of that.
Yeah, I think that depth adds for the long snapper spot, and Pepper, I still think, has 2 years left, but USC's backup long snapper, I forget his name, he just entered the transfer portal. So yeah. I'm sure Ryan Daugherty, the special teams coach, reached out to, I'm sure, multiple junior colleges in the area and said, hey, do you have anyone? We have a need here, probably more of a depth piece, but hey, you never know with an injury. Maybe this newer guy, McDonough, I think his name is, could come in and play if Pepper gets hurt or something. So, hey, USC football, a spot on the team, even if it's a walk-on spot, that means something to a lot of people. And then, it's competition. Two punters, I think, is funny. Hey, if you want to come to USC and compete, we think you're good enough, by all means. So now they have three guys vying for one punting spot. And they just desperately needed better kickoff guys, because no matter if it was Lynch, if it was Chaplicki, even Tyler Robles got a shot at one of them, they were just not consistently getting touchbacks, which put an already bad defense at a disadvantage if there was a good return. So I think that's a big part of it. And then Lynch, like I said, missed the five kicks. So you need some competition for him. And I'm excited to see who wins the job, because I believe if Lynch has a better camp, I don't think Lance was, or the Georgia Southern kicker was guaranteed any playing time. Yeah, Michael Lance. I think it's a competition, and that's for the best.
Yeah. No, I think I think the good thing is their offense was good, right? There's just – you probably – Lincoln Riley feels pretty confident his offense is going to be good. The defense was horrific, and they're doing everything they can to address that on the coaching side, needed to fix that. And then I think on the special team side too, realizing like they were not good enough on special teams. And when your defense is bad too, you can't be bad in two-thirds of the game, and the offense can only carry you so far. So this looks like he's addressing problems that you had last year, which is good. I mean, sometimes coaches don't acknowledge problems and they just think, oh, well, this happened. Nope. They're like, look, we're not going to suck on special teams. We're going to like, if this guy's terrible, we're going to put in the next guy in. And so I think that's a positive sign. I want to talk about the chart real quick, and then we'll get into questions. I will put this up, but looking at it right now, just in general, and when you guys see it, you know, I have it broken up between classes and positions, and it will tell you, you know, which, you know, how many freshmen, juniors, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. Right now, it's, you know, there's a lot of freshmen, and that's usually the case because you got guys coming in. 31 freshmen I have on the chart, and then it's pretty even after that, which we haven't seen at USC for a while, but 15 sophomores, 15 juniors, and then 19 seniors, and some of those guys are, you know, you've just brought in for 1 year. So I think we're seeing a higher percentage of seniors than we were maybe a few years ago when you weren't bringing in one-year transfers as often. It's happening a little bit more now, but the upperclassmen, it's a little more evened out. There are only three quarterbacks and four running backs right now, but I think that's where USC is going to go in, maybe adding a running back there. Up to 9 wide receivers now, with a core being those 4 sophomores that USC has. 6 tight ends, with 4 of them still being in their freshman season, Cade Eldridge being a redshirt freshman, but they're expecting Walker Lyons after his mission to come on and join the team this fall. 13 offensive linemen with a few guys spread out, 5 guys over sophomore, junior, senior year, but the rest are all 8 are in the freshman class, 4 redshirt freshmen and then 4 true freshmen. And then on the defensive side, 7 defensive linemen, 9 defensive ends. So there's some bodies there, but a lot of those guys are freshmen. 8 linebackers with a group of freshmen and a group of seniors kind of separated. Almost the same thing for the cornerbacks with 10 corners, 4 freshmen and 5 seniors. 8 safeties kind of spread out almost evenly. And like I mentioned, the 3 special teams players, but sort of like what the chart looks like now, the distribution and everything. Anything sort of stand out to you, Connor, the way the roster's kind of spread out over the 4 different classes and all the different positions?
I immediately jumped to the linebacker spot where you have 4 seniors, and I don't believe any of them have any eligibility left after this year. Mason Cobb will be gone. Easton Mascarenhas Arnold will be gone. Rajon Davis will be gone. And Eric Gentry will be gone, barring a redshirt injury year. I think all those guys have either, if they had a COVID year, used it, or if they didn't, this is now going to be their 4th season. So looking to a year from now, USC will probably be active in the portal. But one of the big talking points of the spring was how good Elijah Newby's been, how good Desmond Stevens has been. He was one of my top players in the spring game defensively. He even saw some reps with some of the first team guys. So I think USC did a nice job recruiting those freshman linebackers. And a year from now, they're going to be pushed onto the field. USC really won't have any other options. I could see him adding 1 starting caliber linebacker, but then Elijah Newby, Desmond Stevens, your time is now. And I'm looking forward to that because those guys are really athletic. They're bigger. They just look like classic linebackers in college football. And I think they're going to both be pretty good based on what I've seen this spring. And that's exciting to me, but that's more of a 2025 thing than it is 2024. What will be really interesting this season, Ryan, is with all that experience and that experience depth at the linebacker spot, if Elijah Newby or Desmond Stevens is actually playing this year, that's significant because they're beating out guys who are desperate to get to the NFL and want to make a name for themselves. And this is their final year. If you're a true freshman getting on the field in a group with guys like that, I think that's really significant.
Yeah, for sure. I think it is. It's a really good senior group. I expect the linebackers to play a lot better this year than what we've seen the last couple of years, and some promising young guys in there as well. A lot of good depth in the secondary, I'd say. You know, the offensive line is, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Some of those freshmen are going to have to be playing big roles on the two deep and, you know, might play a bunch. So, see where they kind of pan out. Right now I have the number, total number is 80. So five scholarships left to play with for Lincoln Riley. We'll see if he's able to add some more players here in the coming, you know, weeks and months, I guess, heading into the season. But yeah, that's a pretty good number, I think, to be at. I think they would have liked to not lost a couple of those defensive linemen, like you mentioned, or maybe add one or two. And I think they're still going to try to do that. But so stay tuned for the chart. We'll have that up, you know, during the week. And if you're not a subscriber, this is a free content item. But if you're not a subscriber, you can get in on there too. The war rooms have been a lot of fun these last few weeks. A lot of good information in the off season. So make sure you check it out. And if you're not been a subscriber, you can get 30% off an annual membership. You will not regret it. If you're listening to this show, you will probably enjoy. I almost guarantee you, you'll enjoy a subscription to USCFootball.com. So make sure you just check that out. All right. Anything else, Connor? We can get some questions.
Let's get into some questions.
All right. So we'll do it. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we will do questions. So back in a minute, everyone.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All righty, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, there wasn't really a break, but this is for our podcast. We are simulcasting. We're putting on YouTube as a kind of a side thing to the regular podcast, so we appreciate that. We do have some emails I want to get to, text message, and we got some questions in the chat we'll get to too. First up is an email from Scott in Houston. USC's last national championship caliber team was in 2008, in my estimation. While USC has had tremendous skill players over the past 15 years, the Trojans have fallen far behind the Alabamas and Georgias and Ohio States of the world. USC has had just two linemen drafted in the first round since 2016. You can have all the skill players in the world, but championships will always be won at the line of scrimmage. Hopefully, Riley and Lynn have a plan to improve USC where it matters most and gets the program back in its rightful place. Always enjoy the podcast, Scott in Houston. Not really a question there, I guess, but do you agree with Scott?
Totally fair take. And I wrote a story yesterday, three things I know about USC, three things I think after the spring portal windows closed. And the last thing, it's something I've talked about on the show before. I think the fate of the season depends on what USC does at the line of scrimmage, just because there are so many uncertainties there. You have Bear Alexander on defense, who I'd characterize as a sure thing. And then on the offensive line, I think Jonah Monheim, even though he's switching spots, and Emmanuel Prenyon, those are two sure things. But there's a bunch of spots on both lines where a lot is up in the air, and you're going to be relying on guys who just don't have that much game experience. So could they come in and do really well? Of course. Sure. But it would be a lot better if you had guys who were good last season and are returning, and they just don't have a lot of that. And we all know about the defensive line issues just from a depth perspective. We've talked about it a lot already. So I totally agree. And I think as USC transitions to the Big Ten now, what's the biggest need on the team? Where are the biggest question marks? It's what the emailer was talking about. It's the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. John in Oakland wrote in. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but this was more about our House of Victory interviews. And we're not doing one this week. It's graduation, a lot going on campus, but we'll get back to doing those again. I don't know if we'll be able to do one next week just because we're going to have a special guest, former player, and also the beach volleyball team. So, but yeah, he wanted to ask us some non-football related questions, which I try to do. I think we've tried to do that a lot. The good thing about having the player on for like a half an hour is there's a lot of stuff you can talk about. So John, I think, yeah, thanks for the suggestion. I think we try to ask them non-football related things as well. A lot of times ask like what they, you know, sports they were doing or who, you know, things like that, or playing video games, just to kind of get a feel for what they're like. But they've been a lot of fun. So thanks for House of Victory for setting those up. We'll keep bringing you those through the off season. We get to hear from a player on the team and what they think about what's going on. And, you know, we got spring info, we got post spring info, and then we'll get some summer workout info. So it should be a lot of fun to talk to those guys as we go forward. But everyone we've talked to, Connor, so far has been great. They've been really good on the show.
Yeah, and a few of the off-the-field highlights, we learned about Kamari Ramsey loving chess and how he thinks he's the best player on the team. And we got to ask Easton Mascarenhas Arnold about what it was like growing up with his brother Akili Arnold. And I thought that was a really unique answer he gave about how Akili at first kind of bullied him a little bit because he had two older siblings. And then when their parents got married, he finally had a younger sibling, and it was Easton. And now Easton looks like a starting linebacker for USC. So I think Akili, we have him to thank for toughening up one of the starting linebackers at USC. I love asking the off-the-field stuff too. It's interesting for me if it's a newer player or a younger player, who are your friends on the team? And you learn about the cliques and just the guys who hang out together off the field. So I like that too. And that made me think, Ryan, I think you texted us about it. Albert Breer wrote a great story in Sports Illustrated about the draft process for the Bears and what led them to picking Caleb Williams, and there was a lot of really cool off-the-field stuff in that story as well. So I do really appreciate and value the off-the-field answers, and we do try to do that. So I guess maybe we can do it some more.
Yeah, thanks, John, for that. We had a text message from Ian. This was actually for the Kapata 2-star, but I didn't get to give it to them in time. But we'll just kind of address it here. What the actual, and then he has a bunch of symbols. Someone tell Lincoln Riley and House of Victory to stop being cheap asses and pay those defensive linemen in the portal. Oregon's obviously paying everyone as they just plucked the top two defensive linemen. Big Ten teams are going to run all over USC. Where are the defensive linemen nose tackles at? What options does USC even have at this point? That's sort of like that's what the fan base is kind of feeling right now, Connor.
Uh-huh, and it's interesting because I thought that as USC missed out on Harmon, they would pivot. And it looked like for a second they pivoted to Demonic Williams, but then he quickly chose Oklahoma and USC was always playing catch up with him. So like I mentioned, JVR Suggs, the Grand Valley State defensive tackle, he's a guy who USC's had on a visit and he's included USC in his top six. But then there's some other areas too. Even though it's kind of late in the game, they're still defensive tackles and they still have some interest. And one of them is Brandon Lane from Stephen F. Austin. But I was in touch with someone today who said USC doesn't have a visit plan for him yet. Things could change, but right now there's nothing scheduled. And then there's a guy from Louisiana Monroe named Aiden Huntington, who is another big body inside who USC doesn't have a visit set up with. So I thought maybe that it's kind of, I keep using the word, but it's kind of now or never, desperation time. I was surprised. It looks like USC, after missing out on Harmon, who I felt like they kind of had all their eggs in his basket, now maybe they have all their eggs in JBR Suggs's basket. And I mean, the portal's closed. If they miss out on Suggs, these other two guys will probably be somewhere else by then too. The clock is ticking, and I'm surprised that USC isn't really going out of its way to add more guys. And maybe at this point, it's just so bottom of the barrel, they prefer the guys they have in-house. No matter how you slice it, though, it's an unfortunate situation. And I think they just need more bodies. So maybe if Suggs goes somewhere else, or maybe if they add Suggs, then we can stop talking about this. But if he goes somewhere else, I'm sure they'll pivot again because they just need more bodies.
Yeah, they definitely do. We got a couple questions from the YouTube chat. Malibu Trojan, can we win 10 games with the team we have now?
I think if you look at the schedule, it's hard, but there isn't a, oh, you got Ohio State, you're not beating Ohio State. Oregon, I know people will be frustrated, but Oregon is just on another level this upcoming season compared to USC. But you don't play either of those teams, so I wouldn't rule it out. But I could kind of see a 7-8-9 win team being more likely. While you don't have a rock star team who you're going up against, I just think it's a really, really consistent group of solid Big Ten teams in the league. And then LSU in the non-league is a challenge. I think it could be hard to get to 10 wins. I would probably say they won't do that right now, but I don't think it's impossible by any stretch.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that you certainly can. And it's I think the two teams that have added the most this offseason, that have won the offseason in the Big Ten, are Oregon and Ohio State. You don't play either one of those. The two teams that were playing for the national championship both lost their head coaches, and they're pretty big rebuilds. You know, Michigan's still going to be really good. You're going to Ann Arbor, but you know, LSU is coming to all the way to Las Vegas. They don't travel a whole lot like that. They lost their Heisman winning quarterback and two first round wide receivers. You know, it's not like you're looking at anyone going, man, there's no way they can beat that team. But there's a lot of really good teams. And if USC sort of takes care of their own business and gets a lot better on defense, like I think they will, just because of the coaching staff. And I know everyone's worried about defensive line, but the staff should be significantly better than what they had in the scheme and all of that. And the offense is still really good, you know, a top 10 kind of offense, because that's what Lincoln Riley does, improve special teams. I don't see the reason why you couldn't win 10 games. I think, you know, 9-3 is probably where I'd be guessing this year, even with this team. So yeah, certainly 10 is in the realm of possibility, but the schedule is hard, but it's not impossible. I mean, you can beat Penn State at home. You can beat Wisconsin at home. There's a lot of, you know, you got to be on your game every week, because there's a lot of good teams that are going to try to push you around in the Big Ten. And, you know, if you're not playing physical, they're trying to do this offseason. They're trying to upgrade their physicality. If you're not able to do that, you'll probably get pushed around. You don't want to lose on the road to like a Maryland or a Minnesota or something, but, you know, you could lose those games. But I think you take care of those games. There's some really tough ones that you sort of split, and, 10 wins isn't out of the question, but it could be 7 wins again. It could be 7-5. You know, I think there's a range there. But it's not like, oh, they can't win 10 games. I would not say that. I know some people in the chat were saying that. I don't think either Connor and I would agree with that. We had a couple of questions for Blackie Chan. Do you think we will start to see a trend of players to be at a school for one season and then try to test the NIL market?
Absolutely. I think we're already seeing that.
Yeah, it's already happened.
So, I mean, look at Tyler Barron, who USC is after an edge rusher. He spent, I think, 3 years at Tennessee, enters the portal in December. He goes to Louisville, spring practice with them, and now he's in the portal again. And I think NIL was probably a factor there. So it's not only year to year. Sometimes it's the season to a spring camp at one place and then Now you're at another place. And look at Isaiah Rakes. I don't know if his transfer was totally NIL motivated, but we're seeing guys leave in such a short amount of time that I think it's already happening. And it's maybe even worse than Blackie Chan is describing, because it's not just season to season. It's fall season to spring camp to fall season, and guys are at three places.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. He also wanted to know, were you surprised that USC wasn't in the mix for Peyton Woodyard, or was it mainly NIL?
I think there were some serious back channels before we entered the portal, some feet put, and they really decided he was going to go to Oregon. So if it was a clean slate recruitment and USC was even, and everyone was even, there was no front runner, I think he certainly could play, but I think behind the scenes a lot happened to him go to Oregon. But when he enters, he's already gone, and I think that was a big part of it. It wasn't like he wasn't a highest bidder. He wasn't a clean slate. I'm going to go where I'm wanted. He was, before I enter the portal, get a destination, and it ended up being Oregon.
AJC was like 9-3 record. So you're okay with a quote, great coach in Lincoln Riley only getting 9 wins. Okay. So I think AJ is not a fan of Lincoln Riley putting great coach in quotes. You can't argue with what Lincoln Riley has done in his short career. He's only 40 years old. You know, he's had the most number one overall draft picks of any coach ever. That's pretty impressive. In the Heisman's, making the college football playoff. USC was a dumpster fire. Probably didn't help himself by winning 11 games in the first season and being really close to a playoff. He made mistakes with Alex Grinch, keeping him around too long. That should have been a one-year thing. I could understand year one, not year two. That was his mistake. You're coming out from under that. You're going into the Big Ten. You know, the whole world of college football is changing, how it's happening. Things that are not in his control about recruiting, where recruiting was all about those relationships with coaches and all that kind of stuff before. Now he got this money factor involved, and he didn't have the best collective behind him. They're getting better at that. So yeah, going in with the kind of schedule they have, like 9-3 would be a pretty good season, I think. But is it like 3 years from now if you're going 7-5? No, that's not acceptable. You're still, you know, there is a rebuild process that needed to happen from, you know, more than 10 years of horrible decisions from athletic directors and bad coaching. You couldn't have, you had Clay Helton running your program for like a decade. Like, you can't have that. Like, he is not a good coach. That drives things into the ground. And it did. And so Lincoln Riley's trying to build from that in a changing landscape of college football. So yeah, I'm okay if you go 9-3 with that schedule, because that might get you into the playoff in the Big Ten. So it's kind of crazy. But yes, AJC, I know you're not a big fan, but I would say, yes, I'm okay with that.
And great coaches, they're up and downs. You know, nothing is linear in all of this. I mean, Jim Harbaugh, it took him a long time to get Michigan into the playoff. And then, you know, they break down the door this past season. And I think even when he was struggling, a lot of people questioned, is he a great coach? Is he not? But I still feel like he was a great coach. And Lincoln Riley, well, he didn't have the NFL success that Harbaugh had in the past. I think he can hang his hat on the quarterback success that he's had. So he is an elite quarterback coach. And I know I'm not breaking any news saying that, but I think these great coaches, like, it's so hard to do everything perfect. And some years you have a Michigan where it all just clicks and they built to that. And I think Lincoln Riley, if the USC goes 7-5 again, he'll have to answer some tough questions, but I still wouldn't say, oh, he's not a great coach. I think he's proven that he is. And this season, while USC might take some lumps because of some of the poor roster construction, 7-5, 9-3, sometimes great coaches go 7-5, 9-3. I still believe he's the guy for the job. It took Harbaugh a long time to get over that hump. And I think Riley's shown that he's in it for the long haul. He's shown he's willing to make changes, even if they came a little bit later than some people would have hoped. I don't think a bad record 1 year necessarily means a guy is no longer a great coach. So eventually you got to win more, but I think it's important to give a guy time.
Yeah. We got a super chat. Thanks from Oscar. I was smiling ear to ear the day Reggie got his Heisman back, but if the NCAA still has him as a quote ineligible player, How much can USC do as far as recognizing him as a player besides putting the trophy back in Heritage Hall? I mean, he's not disassociated anymore. They can fully.
Well, I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry to cut you. I know that he'll run out with the team as an honorary captain. So that's huge. And like what you were saying, right? Like there are things he can do. And I think now that this is as excited to know. So I don't want to get into the weeds about like the record book and where everything lies with that. And I don't know exactly outside of what they can do for bringing the Heisman back and having him run out of the tunnel with the team, but he's going to be around more. And I think that's a big win for everyone.
Yeah. Thanks, Oscar, for the super chat. That was really nice of you. We're getting a little choppy with Connor and the connection here. So I'll do one more and we'll let him go. Swayze says, say you're a defensive lineman on scholarship playing next to a guy who got a six-figure payday and your coach makes $10 million. What kind of, quote, team atmosphere can you have in this new professional college football league? I think that's certainly a challenge and maybe one of the reasons why you don't pay $1 million to a defensive lineman coming in for 1 year, because that could have impact on your roster and the morale of the team. So you have to be kind of conscious of overpaying for a certain player when another player that maybe has been there for a while isn't getting paid that much. But that's the reality of college football. That's going to be happening. I don't think your coach makes $10 million is going to matter as much. The NFL is different. You know, professional sports, the players make more than coaches. That's probably going to, you know, it's not going to be the way it is in college football yet, but it might get that way. We might see coaches' salaries go down. USC paid the going rate for Lincoln Riley because that's what you pay for a coach like that. And the good thing is USC was never paying the going rate before, so they at least were playing the game. But now when schools are going to be on the hook for $20 million more a year to share revenue with players and maybe give more scholarships out and all that kind of stuff, you're probably going to see athletic departments cut in certain areas where you didn't have to pay players, you could pay coaches a lot more, and the prices went up and up and up. Now you're paying players, the price to pay a coach might start coming down. So you might not see the $10 million a year figure for coaches anymore. It's hard to say. But you're right. I mean, as far as morale goes, you have to be conscious of that. If you really overpay for a guy that comes in and he's not really a great locker room dude, everyone's going to resent him. Like there's games you're going to have to play with that. But as far as what the coach goes, that's just the way it's always been in college football. But I think you're going to see what players make and what coaches make start to get closer, because I don't think you're going to be able to pay coaches as much if you have to play players too. Any thoughts on that, Connor?
Yeah, and sorry if I'm coming in choppy. I agree with what you're saying. I do think it NIL kind of lends itself to having some locker room problems where, say, a big money defensive lineman transfer comes in and doesn't live up to his payday, and a younger, scrappier, not on as big of an NIL deal guy plays really well, then I wouldn't be surprised if that player who wasn't getting paid as much, like, hey, what the hell? I'm doing a lot better than this other guy. So I do think that sort of lends itself to locker room problems, and it's another area that just today have to navigate, and I don't really know what the fix is for that, because it's not like, hey, you did this in the past and we're rewarding you with this contract. It's all kind of year to year.
Yeah. We'll do one more. AJC wanted this one. I think he asked us twice. Where are the hundreds of players that want to be here that Lincoln Riley was talking about? Do you think he still needs a PR coach? His quotes aren't helping him when it comes to recruiting failures. Well, it doesn't mean anything. There could still be hundreds of players they turned down, AJ. Like, I think that's probably true. There's a lot of people that wanted to come. They're not taking all of them. They can't, you know, you only have 85 scholarships available.
Yeah, I think AJ is frustrated. I understand. USC still has standards, so there are a lot of guys in the portal who would come to USC in a second, but
yeah,
they're not taking everyone. So yeah. I agree, Ryan.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. Thanks, Connor, for doing this kind of last minute. And be sure to stay tuned next week. We got some fun shows. We'll talk any USC stuff, but we'll and we got a special guest, former football player, very popular one. He'll be joining the show too. So we'll get to all of that. We're setting that up. And yeah, congrats again to USC Beach Volleyball for Pete National Championship. And congrats to Connor for getting through the show. even remotely. It's better when we do it in person, but appreciate you guys hanging with us remotely. But thank you, Connor, for coming in. Good to see you. And
thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, and everyone else, thank you so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Hope you all enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
If it seems like the crew at your neighborhood Trader Joe's is having fun, it's probably because we are.
And now we're having fun on a podcast, too, called Inside Trader Joe's.
Let's talk about what makes Trader Joe's Trader Joe's. The products, the customers, the crew.
Why is everybody so nice? It's like, because they are.
Because they are.
Inside Trader Joe's is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thanks for listening.
And thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.